Welcome to This Just In, the show bringing you the latest advancements in healthcare, strategy, innovation, and public policy. And now, for the fastest voice in healthcare, here's your host, Justin Barnes.
The show will go on. Welcome to the special edition of This Just In Radio. I'm your host, Justin Barnes. Today we're broadcasting live from the Atlanta studios. As most of you know, we're supposed to be in sunny Orlando for the HIMSS 20 conference. But with that being canceled due to the coronavirus precautions, I could not be happier that we're still able to pull this show off. Many thanks to all of my guests that stuck with me and all of you to make this show happen today. Before we get too far, though, let me introduce my air and my radio and on-air personality and producer, Stone Payton from Business Radio X. Welcome, my friend.
Thank you, sir.
It's great to have you here. Also in studio today is a great friend of the show and producer, Roberta Mullen, broadcasting us across the Healthcare Now radio network as well. Welcome, Roberta.
Thanks, Justin, for inviting me. I love being in studio with you.
Yeah, you're always a great personality here to have with us. Dr. Jamie Skipper, are you with us?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can, we can. So CEO of Elevation Health and former ONC research data scientist and a very good friend of mine, a very good colleague who always keeps me well-informed, well in line. And so do you, Roberta, and so do you, Stone. But Jamie's always there for my emergency phone calls and something that I need to understand. Or a brainstorm. And she's also one of the first people that supported the Health Innovation Think Tank from day one from a content standpoint. And she was one of my experts. So, Dr. Skipper, without introduction, welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. It's always fun to be on your show, Justin, always.
Excellent. Thank you. So we're going to do a little bit of listeners, we're going to do a little bit of a wrap-up from what we just heard. Jamie comes from, actually the ONC comes from Capitol Hill. That's where we first met many, many moons ago when she worked with Dr. Gingrey. But health IT has been in your blood for a long time. You're actually, I mean, to be honest, you're one of the first legislators and legislative staff that actually helped us create some of the very first days of health IT back in the late 2000s. So not to put age on any of us, but you're one of the pioneers. I know you don't see yourself as that, but you are.
I know. It was an honor, a privilege to be part of those pre-high-tech talks and sausage making of what then became high-tech. But I think we did some really great work, and it's been really exciting to see where we have come. A lot of people are wanting us to be further while others want us to be slower.
Right.
But I think we are where we need to be.
Yeah. I call those people anchor droppers, people who are always trying to slow us down. And I say, are you going to drop the anchor right now? Like literally we're testifying or we're giving comments or something. And they're like, drop the anchor. I'm like, no. Pick that anchor up.
And wheel.
That's right. Let's go. Yeah. So this is going to kind of wrap up what we just heard over the last 40 minutes with Dr. Rucker, Steve, Elise, and Catherine. So first of all, I'd love to get your impression. I know that you also dove into the rules yesterday. You've been ferociously reviewing everything and putting even some comments together. But I'd love to offer you the floor for a couple of minutes to give some of your high points, either what you heard or what you read or what you just had validated from what you saw and read.
Yeah, so, you know, at Elevation, what we focus on is working with a lot of those third-party apps, as people would call it, the health IT developers that might not be a cover of a business associate, and those that are really trying to be accessors of the data. And so it was really exciting and really interesting to see how they newly defined health information networks and health information exchanges. I think that was one of the things that we were really interested to see how they defined, because the way it was worded in the proposed rule kind of created this large bucket that made a lot of health IT developers fall into that bucket that probably shouldn't have been in that bucket. So the definition is something that we're excited to see how it came out. The way that they have now newly defined or focused the definition of EHI is also really important. So we're getting to what we need to get to. And I think what's really important for folks to understand, especially among my audience, is to understand from those that are So you have people looking at it from the data holder. How can I not information block? And my job is, okay, so how then for the people who want to access the data, how can they access the data? How can they put themselves in a place where the data holders can't claim one of the exceptions? Mm. And so I think some of the provisions in the rule really clarify some of the pieces for them. So for example, one of the areas under the privacy piece, talk about a hospital or a data holder needing to make sure that consent is in place. And for a third party app, well, you know, how do you do the back and forth to find out how the data holder can't claim the exception? And now the rule specifically says that the data holder has to have an authorization form that they need to give out that then specifically says what criteria need to be met. That in itself, I think, is a huge, huge win for the app developers so that it's very clear to them on what they need to do. There's a lot of other pieces like that that I'm excited about, but I could talk on forever, so I'll stop here.
Yeah, no, this is exactly what I want to dive into. I want to kind of, you know, give the floor to you a little bit and let you say, hey, you know, this is what that heard. I heard, I mean, I've only heard really at this point kind of favorable feedback from the rule, from what I've read, from what I've seen from Clarity. I think that some of the terms, you know, this was very accommodating to the industry. I heard that even this morning speaking with somebody before we went on air. So, I mean, I think overall it's being well received. I think it's very fair. We're still going to learn more of the teeth, I believe, that we just heard. And this came out in some of the calls yesterday that I was on, but also that the OIG will be putting out a proposed rule here in the short run on how we're going to do some enforcement and some, quote unquote, the teeth of how we're going to enforce some of these components. Yeah, but I think all from a fair timeline. This has actually the clock, the 6 month on the information blocking rule hasn't even started yet. It won't even until it goes into the Federal Register. So I think all this is just, again, very fair. So what are some of your thoughts there?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting that folks, you know, catch that. You know, it's once the rule gets into the Federal Register, there's 6 months, right? Yep. As Steve said. Yep. Then after that, based on what, as Elise said, once the OIG specifically defines in their rule and, you know, you guys specified, you know, there's going to be a proposed rule and then a final rule around what constitutes, you know, civil penalties and what that's going to look like, then OIG is going to be able to go after the folks that are information blocking. Mm-hmm. There is going to be another piece in there that I haven't got clarity on myself, but we're looking into it, and it's going to be a really important question to ask. And Elise alluded to this, mm-hmm. Where she's very very astute in making sure that she leaves the door open, because it's going to be interesting to see what other players also have enforcement capabilities. So, for example, under the DOJ can go after, you know, the I'm losing the words here in terms of you know, trade practices, to where they say that you have to live by what you say, right?
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting to see how DOJ comes into the practice there too, in addition to what OIG can do in terms of information blocking. And so, as Catherine said, in terms of what FTC's enforcement capabilities are going to be, it's the kind of landscape of enforcement between all these agencies is going to be interesting to stitch together.
Yep.
But again, I'll have to say, those are for the folks that, you know, are aiming to you know, try to block information. So from the point of view of the folks that are kind of broadly in my audience, which are the folks that are the data accessors, this is also important to understand, because as they try to access the data, what's the ace in your pocket to know, you know, what the data holders can and can't do, is going to be interesting to have as, you know, they go to those conversations, to those renegotiation tables. But I will say that, and we said this before in some of our own blogs in Elevation, you know, of course, you're creating business relationships here. So it's important to know what the landscape is, but go forward very, you know, very lightly and very, very astutely.
Yep. No, very good point. And one of the other pieces that I wanted to call out and that we covered pretty well with Steve are the key timelines. So, you know, 0 to 6 months to start off with the information blocking. And then you've got 6 to 24 months with covered the US CDI and then 24 months after that for the full scope. So I think that gives the industry a lot of time. You know, obviously, as my previous hat in the vendor world, you know, we wanted sometimes 18 months before any significant changes, but they do a good job with laying out some timelines there. Roberta, you want to ask a question or make a statement there?
Yeah, I asked Steve the same thing, and that how do you see the industry? Are they prepared for this?
Right. Yeah.
You work with third party people, you said.
Yeah. What would be your opinion on that?
Yeah, I think the fear that I had, I will say, was around how they were going to define HIE, HIN, because the folks that may have fallen into the bucket, if they would have been more broad about their definition, I think there would have been a lot more folks, a lot more third-party entities that wouldn't have been prepared because they are not watching this. But I think that the way that they defined it, a lot of those players hopefully have been watching it to some degree. But I really, really hope that folks work with entities like Elevation and folks that have been in this sphere, because what's really important is understanding how all of these pieces of legislation and regulations work together to stitch together the business model that they need to have to be successful in the healthcare paradigm. Because, you know, we had a lot of discussion around the ONC information blocking rule and the certification criteria. But as Karen alluded to before the ONC folks came on, is that, you know, there's a huge play here with CMS's rule that also came out on Monday with how the health plans need to act and how, you know, the data needs to be exchangeable and how they need to be transparent with their information. And there's other rules also that are going to be at play in terms of how this landscape shapes up for data to flow to optimize care and to improve patient outcomes.
I'll be looking for your blog post on HIE versus HIN. Is that right?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Put that
and
in the queue.
Do, you know, one of the blogs I want to point to is last year, last summer, right after the comments came in from the proposed rule, once the comment period finished, we did put out a couple blog posts on what the comments overall said, and that was really interesting as well.
Great.
That's excellent. So one thing I'll kind of wrap up here, you know, and I get your opinion too, is Dr. Rucker started off with just the importance of having a transparent business model. And if you did not have a transparent business model, and I think even John Holomka talked about that, Anish talked about that, and even Karen mentioned that a little bit as well, Dr. DeSalvo. So I think that's important. If you don't have a transparent business model, you could be in trouble. And so this rule really highlights that. And not only does it support interoperability and consumerism, but really, you know, API-based transparency out there in healthcare. So I love it. So what thoughts would you have to add to that, Jamie?
Right. Well, I would be remiss to say that the two of the things that we've been watching here is around the effect of interoperability and the future of interoperability and info blocking, as well as the huge trend that we're seeing around telehealth. And, you know, and I know that that's your next panel, so I thought maybe I can make a comment that would be a segue.
Thank you.
In that, you know, the data that you need to flow to optimize telehealth will also rest on some of the provisions in the ONC and CMS rule too. So the interplay between those spheres are going to be very important to process.
Oh, excellent point. And you do cue me up very well, because we do have a virtual care strategy and innovation panel coming, which we actually had that panel scheduled 4 months ago and planned 4 months ago because we knew the importance of it. However, you know, now with COVID-19 and coronavirus and preparedness and all and the cancellation of HIMSS, and then all of this is happening across the country and even globally, virtual care is more prominent than ever on everybody's radar screen. So I think we're visionary, we're timely, and obviously grateful for the opportunity here. So, but Dr. Skipper, always an amazing partner, guest, friend, colleague, strategist. I'm grateful for your time and thank you for joining us. But I'll give you, 30 seconds on anything that you want to say regarding what we should be keeping an eye on from a strategy standpoint, from a policy standpoint. What do you think? Floor is yours.
Yeah, so it's going to be really interesting to watch regulation as it changes and legislation that's right on the floor now, coming on the floor soon in terms of expanding telehealth reimbursement. And so that's something to definitely bring up in your panel. It's also going to be really interesting to watch some of the other rules that are going to be coming out later this year, probably, or very soon, not only the OIG rule around how to enforce around information blocking, but also around sharing health IT in terms of anti-kickback and Stark, as well as possibly some updates on HIPAA itself. So keep all of that in the forefront. There's still a lot of changes coming.
Yep. No, great point. I mean, as you and I have worked for well over a decade, I mean, you've got to successfully navigate legislation, regulation, because it can either fuel your strategy and fuel your company, fuel your efforts, or completely hinder them or eliminate them. So you got to stay on top of this, Absolutely. As you just said so eloquently. Excellent. Yes.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Justin.
You got it, Dr. Skipper. And Stone is my next guest here. Dr. Bulbjerg, founder and CEO of Cure for You.
Yes.
Welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Excellent. And obviously, you're a leader and a pioneer in this space as well. So I know, were you able to catch some of the comments there on what they're doing with telehealth and remote care? And so I'd love to just... I was very impressed. I love the chatting with them. I do it every year, and every year it gets better. So, but I'd love to hear some of your thoughts on where you're seeing healthcare, the trends out there in the industry.
Yeah, happy to share. I mean, so I'm really focused on remote care from a provider perspective, mm-hmm. What works and what doesn't work. And the big trends right now is really like what tools can we use to figure out what's happening when patients are at home, like remote patient monitoring, making sure that all the ones with chronic conditions or where they go home with the conditions, how to make sure we capture the right data. Mm-hmm. But also, and how can we, when I say we providers, be more efficient in the way we spend our time with our patients and for the patient perspective as well, using telemedicine. And this is happening big time right now with the situation with the coronavirus, right? Everybody's kind of like, whoa, this is probably something that we could use. And so very interesting time to see what's happening right now.
I completely agree. I mean, I can imagine what's doing to what, your company and others like it. It's just, the outreach and the need. I mean, we've all known it's been there. We've all been pushing it for many, many years. However, it's as I mentioned earlier, it takes a pandemic to get people off the sidelines. not just the care providers, but also the regulators. We're seeing some great just adoption and moving forward of incentives around telehealth. We saw what North Carolina did. Congress now, I know, is taking this up at another level. So, I mean, what insights do you want to share there? What from the ground level, what do you see out there?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's really interesting. I think as you said, a lot of organizations have wanted to do this for a long time, but this is kind of like, oh, well, better get started now because we might have to shut down our practice in 2 weeks or maybe even next week. How do we do that? So I think two things are happening. I mean, there will be a lot. We see that are just go right now. And then hopefully it doesn't end up being as bad, but I think that will open the eyes of a lot of organizations that they probably better have a strategy about this and get started because it might happen again. But the other thing is also all the creativity we see right now. Organizations creating care plans for the patients, giving them devices to go home for with if they are coronavirus positive, with an oxygen monitor, giving them a way to monitor the oxygen saturation at home, turning on the telehealth. I mean, it's really cool to see what people are doing out there today. I think this whole thing, this disaster, is going to start a lot of creativity right now and a lot of movement in this market. So it's going to be very exciting to see what's happening next.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think you're onto something there. And he's even Dr. Alamka mentioned how Mayo Clinic is moving into the home hospital market in Jacksonville, or they said in Florida and in Wisconsin. So I think you're going to see much more movement in that direction, and people are going to be scrambling. Obviously, they'd already pre-planned that, but now I think a lot of care providers out there are going to start to look at what other options are available. You just said it. If we have to close down our clinic, what do we do? How do we still treat our patients? And obviously, telehealth, remote patient monitoring, virtual care, virtual health in general is going to be a significant component. But you've been doing this for many, many years. We're just reacting to it as a society today. But as a leader, you've been doing this for a long time. But what 2 to 3 best practices or strategies can you help, can you share with my audience to navigate some of these trends that you just talked about?
Sure. I mean, because I think what is also going to happen right now is that we'll see a lot of cleanup in mature and non-mature technologies that are out there, because people will go from saying, oh, I'll do a telehealth call with 1 or 2 patients to say, I got to be able to do this with all my patients.
Right.
So, which is good. I think that we'll get some mature technologies really out there. As for what you need to look at, I think you need to look at ease of use for both providers and patients. So providers, integration, single sign-on, I mean, something that is not a standalone is always important, but also ease of use for the patients, right? So think of how do you want this to use? If you go schedule yourself in for a flight, how easy is it to use? How do you check in for your airline tickets? How do you, anything you do that is consumer facing out there, this is what you should think about when you want to implement something for your patients as well, because now they are not patients in your office where you can control them. Now they're consumers. And if you don't deliver something that is really easy to use for them, they just don't want to use it.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, because the patients, to really keep the patients in mind here, as you're looking at technology, you know, you mentioned usability, single sign-on, but also patients are now being, or consumers, patients are consumers. We're being trained by the airlines. You know, we're being trained by people who supply apps and banking, and you mentioned banking and you mentioned airlines on a daily basis. So I know how easy these apps can be. They should be. And so if you're a health IT vendor and you're not thinking like that from that consumer perspective, you could really be behind the eight ball. And I love that you bring that up.
And I think, a lot of, we've been handicapped a little bit in our industry by patient portals, because patient portals were not built for consumers. They were built for meaningful use.
Right.
By just to tick the box, right? And so everybody's saying, well, patients don't want to do that. But that's not really true, right? It's just that technology was not really built to be used. It was just built to tick a box. And that is going to change now. So that's very exciting in my perspective.
So, and I completely agree. So in the closing minute or so, what should we keep our eye on in the future, down the road? I mean, obviously we're talking about a lot of futuristic things in some ways, and some of these are here today, which is wonderful and amazing, but what should we keep our eye on the next couple of years? It's in the horizon.
Well, I think one of the biggest challenges we are facing now is that as we grow this remote care from being a pilot here and there to be something that we're doing with all our patients, the amount of data we get is going to be, immense. And how do we capture the important things and put them in front of the physicians? I mean, the physicians today already have a challenge in looking at what data is in the EMR.
Right.
And now we're talking about tripling the impact amount of data. And so this is a big focus of ours, is how do we make sure we get the important things to the physicians when we are doing remote care. That is really what I think is going to be the next step.
That's a great point. Actually, a couple of my guests brought that up before. I know Rasu and Anish and John talking about all this data. Now we're unleashing the data with this new interoperability rule. However, we can't serve all this up to the doctor. And so we've got to, I agree, we got to manage this in a very smart way. not to overwhelm, to focus in, because also you can completely distract or have, you know, meaningless data be presented, and that's not very functional. So completely agree. Yeah.
And it, and if I can add on, then adding on the communication tools right there. So we're not ending up in a situation where we are virtual in capturing data, but then we tell our patients to come in and talk about it, right? You have to add in the telehealth, the secure messaging, all that stuff so that you, you get a true experience for the patients and not just half experience. I'm going to capture, but then I'm going back to my old stuff. That is going to be the next thing as well.
Completely agree. And that actually came up on that last panel where they talked about how, you know, 95% of telehealth now is chatting. It's telehealth is one piece, but then keeping that consistent communication. It's not about, oh, well, come see me next week. No, it's about helping, keeping an ongoing dialogue to manage their health. And then also habits. I loved what Farhad brought up about habit formation. And I know that you're probably going to engage all that through your app. So, and you do that today, I'm sure. So,
yeah. I mean, an all-in-one solution for your patients is important.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Beaubier,
five different tools.
Thank you. I truly appreciate your time. I know we're supposed to have you on air at HIMSS. I know that you're also disappointed that HIMSS did not go on, but we completely understand, and I'm grateful for you taking time out of your schedule to join us today. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
And congratulations to all what you're doing at Cure for You, to you and the team. So thank you. I'm sure we'll talk soon. Take care.
I appreciate it.
And thank you again to all of you listeners. Without you, we wouldn't have a show. So thank you for joining us today. And as always, you can tune into This Justin Radio weekdays at 2:30 p.m. Eastern, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. You can go to thisjustinradio.com or healthcarenowradio.com/thisjustin. And you can hear our show broadcast again daily. As always, you can track me on Twitter at HIT Advisor and use the hashtag ThisJustinRadio so we can respond to your comments from the show. If you miss any of this broadcast or want to hear more, my shows are always posted on Apple iTunes, SoundCloud, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Google Play, and TuneIn. Thanks, everyone. Have a terrific rest of your day.